Hello, you're very welcome to Inside the Studio episode 13 today, recorded on the 25th of April 2013. You're very welcome to the show. I am your host, Micah McAndrew. And I've got a lot of stuff I want to talk about on today's episode. I want to talk about monetizing your podcast. I want to talk about control surfaces, some really cool control surfaces for video podcasting, controlling your video podcasting. And also, I want to talk about an update to my favorite piece of software for doing video podcasting. So there's a lot I want to cover today, so we might as well get started. But to start off with, I just want to explain that I missed this week's live show slot. Normally, I record this show live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, and I missed that. You know, sometimes you kind of feel like you really don't feel like doing a podcast. And that's what happened to me yesterday. I'm recording this now on Thursday, and I'm actually not recording this live today. But there was a number of reasons why I decided not to do the podcast yesterday. I was messing around with a number of different I was making changes to my workflow, because over the last, I'd say maybe month now, I've been making changes to my workflow because I changed a lot of the equipment that are in my studio. And so I had to make changes to my workflow in order to, and I still didn't really have one definitive workflow until today. So I just kind of finished all the workflow changes today. And I think that now I have a really good workflow going, but it was only today. So I wasn't really prepared for the show yesterday. That was one reason. The other reason was I wasn't really feeling the best. So I decided that I wasn't going to do the show. But, you know, and this is going to kind of move into the first thing I want to talk about on today's show, which is consistency with your podcast. And, you know, it's kind of obvious. Everybody says, really, you want to be very consistent. You want to have your show out every single week at a certain time and a certain date. And that's because certain people, they expect the podcast to be out every day or once every week at the certain day and the certain time. They get to expect that after a while. But I think that it's definitely okay to take a break sometimes. If you need a break, I mean, when you think about it, you're doing this for free. You're doing this as a hobby, maybe. I think that it's okay to take a break sometimes. And so that's what I did yesterday. I took a little bit of a break, and I've been taking quite a lot of breaks recently. And, but I think it's okay. And I think that, you know, you're doing this as a hobby, or you're doing this kind of for fun. Sure, it's good to be consistent, but if you feel like it would benefit you more not to do the podcast for whatever reason, I think you should give it a break sometimes. So I think that is, you know, consistency is one thing, but obviously your well-being is another thing as well. And if you really don't feel like doing the podcast, there's another, like, if you really don't feel like doing the podcast and you decide, okay, I've got to do the podcast, I've got to be consistent, the content is definitely going to be affected by that, because your attitude is like, I really don't want to do this podcast. And that will come out when you're that could come out when you're doing the podcast. So it might be better if you really feel like you don't want to do the podcast, that you don't do it, so that it doesn't affect the content. That's another reason why if you really don't feel like doing the podcast, that you shouldn't do it and just take a break sometimes, because everybody needs a break. But anyway, I want to get on to the kind of main topics of the show, which is monetizing your podcast. Yes, monetizing your podcast. You're doing this as a hobby, maybe. Most podcasters are doing this as a hobby, but wouldn't it be really nice to be able to make a little bit of money on the side? I think it would. I think it's always nice to be able to make a little bit of money on the side, maybe just enough money to pay the costs of podcasting. Because if you really want to make a great, high-quality podcast, there are certain costs for example, microphones, audio gear, video gear, hosting, websites, all that stuff. So, and that all costs money. So wouldn't it be nice to be able to pay that back, not having to pay that back, having the podcast pay for itself, having the hobby pay for itself? That would be nice. Well, there's a number of different ways you can do that. There's a number of different ways you can monetize your podcast. But the first thing I want to talk about is how monetization works and what is monetization. Well, monetization is essentially a way for you to be able to make money off your podcast. And you could monetize your podcast in many ways, okay? But I first of all want to talk about traditional media methods of monetization. And what I mean by traditional media or old media, quote unquote, is radio and TV and how radio and TV makes money. So obviously you pay for TV. Radio is free, but you pay for TV. Well, also on TV, there are ad breaks, and radio as well, there are ad breaks. Okay, so basically what happens is you've got 15 to 30 second ads on the radio and TV, and that's put into maybe, there's a load of them in a 5 minute ad break every 15 minutes or something. And that's, it's the same with TV and radio. That's how it works. You've got ad breaks, and so every 15 minutes there's an interruption of the content. You get these ad breaks. Everyone's familiar with TV and radio ads. And so businesses that have products, okay, any business that has a product, they're trying to advertise that product, they're trying to market their product, get it out there. They will pay thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and even some of the more crazy businesses or companies maybe out there will even spend millions on advertising campaigns. They'll spend millions on just making that one ad for TV, like Apple. They're very famous. They spend millions of dollars even just to make that TV ad. And then they have to pay thousands and thousands of dollars again to the TV companies and to the radio companies to put that advertisement out there. So it's very, very expensive. And that's how TV and radio make their money. They charge these businesses that want to promote, market, advertise their products a lot of money. And that's how they traditionally make their money. There's a problem with this method, though. There's a problem with this advertising method. And that problem is that the ads are targeted towards a certain niche of people, a certain target audience, a certain niche of people. So, for example, a business that's trying, that sells and produces women's clothes. We'll just take that as an example, right? Their target audience are women who are into fashion. Okay? So, however, on TV, both men and women watch TV. So obviously, men aren't going to be interested in women's clothes. So that's one problem, is that, like, not everyone who watches that ad is going to be interested in that ad. The other problem is most people now, they either mute the TV when the ads come on, they mute the radio when the ads come on, or they just walk off, get a drink, get a snack, and then come back when the ads are finished. So most people don't actually pay attention to ads on TV and the radio anymore. And as a result, businesses are now kind of catching on to this. They're not seeing the sales growth that they would expect from putting together this huge advertising campaign. And so they're realizing this, and the amount of businesses that are investing in these gigantic TV ad and radio ad campaigns are becoming fewer and fewer. So, and this is where new media kicks in. What does new media provide that the traditional old media doesn't provide? And that is, they provide niche audiences, and they are that are guaranteed to be interested in the product being advertised. So let's take an example. Maybe there's a podcast about women's fashion. That business could advertise on that business that's selling women's clothes could advertise on that podcast about women's fashion. And every single person who listens to that podcast is guaranteed to be to at least have interest in women's clothes. So that's where new media comes in, that traditional old media doesn't have. So the new media methods of monetization, I will talk about. Now, there are many ways of doing this, of course. But the first thing that I want to talk about is if you're putting out a free podcast, be it audio or video, if you're putting that out free on the web, how can you make money out of a product that you're, or out of a service that you're putting out for free on the web? Well, there is a way of doing this. There's multiple ways of doing this. You could put advertisements on your in your podcast. And this will work very similar to old media. There are a number of businesses out there right now that have signed up to these kind of ad networks for new media. And these ad networks, they gather businesses that are interested in advertising on podcasts and new media. And then you create an account with these networks, these ad networks, and then businesses can see all of these accounts and they can say, I'm interested in advertising on this podcast. Can I contact the person who has this podcast? You can contact the person who has the podcast. The business can contact the person who has the podcast and say, we are interested in advertising on your podcast. Can you give us some information on your podcast, some statistics to the amount of the numbers? That's very the demographic of your podcast. And that's very important to have statistics. And I will cover that on a future episode on how to getting your how to get podcast statistics up and running and how to kind of very accurately measure your statistics, because you might be very interested in that. And of course, if you want to get advertising on your podcast, you're going to have these kind of statistics to show to a potential advertiser. And then you sign a deal. That deal could be a spot, a 30-second spot, a one-minute spot during the podcast, for example, where you promote the advertiser. That's how it works. And it's very similar to the old media or traditional media method of monetization and making money. So that's one way. And so that is flawed in a number of ways. It's flawed in the exact same way as traditional methods. That is that people will skip the ads because if they're watching the podcast on demand, they can very easily skip that ad. So it is flawed in many ways. The other thing about advertising is it's very, very difficult. Because businesses are so used to dealing with TV ad campaigns and all that, they're going to be expecting, like, TV might get millions and millions of views. So you have to have a podcast that has a lot of subscribers or has a lot of downloads, a lot of views, like thousands upon thousands in order to get an advertiser. It's very, very difficult. So that's the downsides. And many podcasts don't have thousands and thousands of subscribers. So that's one downside. So another method is sponsorship. Now, sponsorship is very similar to advertising, except it's actually becoming more and more popular in the new media sector here. And a number of large podcasting networks, such as the Twit Network, have sponsors. They have many, many sponsors. And then they promote those sponsors on the show. And it works very similar to advertising. Except the difference is the way that you promote that business. So typically in advertising, you will play, the business will put together an ad. They'll put together like a 30-second or a 60-second ad, for example, all your video for your podcast, and you play that ad in the middle of the show. However, with sponsorship, you could do an ad yourself. So you could talk about that sponsor. You can incorporate that sponsor into the show. And so if that sponsor is a, for example, let's say you were doing a technology podcast. And so you could get a sponsor on the show that has a technology product. Let's say Apple. Okay, now this is just as an example. You could get Apple on as a sponsor of the show. And so you could, during the show, start talking about Apple, but you're talking about them yourself, and you can put sponsors on the show of products that you actually use yourself. So you're promoting a product that you really like, right? And that's how you should do it. So that's how sponsors work. And so the people who are watching or listening to your podcast are going to be very, very interested in the product that you're talking about, because if it's a technology podcast, you got a technology sponsor, it's related to the topic that you're talking or the niche of the podcast that you're talking about. So, and that has been proven to be a very effective method of monetizing your podcast. But like everything, there are flaws in it. And one of the major flaws in sponsorship is that, let's say you get four sponsors for a show, and every show you promote two of those sponsors. So you might promote sponsor one and sponsor two in one show. You might talk about sponsor three and sponsor four in another show. You might talk about sponsor one and sponsor three in the next show, and so on. And you mix them around. However, you're still going to be talking about those same four sponsors. So people who listen to every single episode of your podcast are going to be hearing and seeing ads for the same sponsor over and over again. Okay? The other thing about sponsorship is sponsorship and advertising works in different ways in terms of making money. Sponsorship can work the traditional advertising way of making money, where every thousand views or listens to your podcast, you get a certain amount. You charge the sponsor or the advertiser a certain amount of money, like how TV works or radio works. The other way that sponsorship works is that the sponsor will provide a link. Let's say it was a service, any kind of a technology service. So let's say it's Netflix, okay? And that sponsor could provide a link to a 30-day free trial of Netflix. And it could be netflix.com/technologypodcast. Right? So when that person and you promote that link, so that person says, oh, this is Netflix. I want to get a 30-day free trial of Netflix. And I heard on this technology podcast that you can go to netflix.com/technologypodcast and you can get the 30-day free trial. So they go to that, and every person who signs up for that 30-day free trial, you get money out of that. And so the way that works, that's a commission type of sponsorship. So you get commission for every person who signs up to the service. That's another type of sponsorship. Okay, and that's another type of making money out of sponsorship. And so, yeah, I mean, and sponsorship is flawed in that you're going to be, as I said, people are going to be hearing the same sponsors over and over again. So if they like the product, they're going to sign up for the 30-day trial once. They're hardly going to be signing up for the 30-day trial every single month. They're going to try the 30-day trial, and if they like the product, they're going to buy the product, and that's it. Right? So the ad after that, the ad is completely irrelevant to them. They're like, yes, I'm already using Netflix. Why do I have to keep listening to this ad or watching this ad for Netflix every single time? So that is flawed in that if you're promoting your sponsor every single show, it's the same sponsor over and over again. People who listen to every show are just going to be hearing the same sponsor. So, and that could be very annoying. So, but there's an alternate method. There's another method that's becoming very, very popular on the web now, on blogs, any kind of online web content. It's becoming very, very popular right now. And that's affiliate marketing. So affiliate marketing, it's kind of difficult to explain. Affiliate marketing works where you're promoting a product or a service. So an example of an affiliate program would be Amazon's affiliate program. That's probably one of the most popular. So Amazon, you can buy stuff online from Amazon. You can buy you can buy technology stuff. I actually recently bought a lot of stuff from Amazon, and I'm signed up to the Amazon affiliate program. Basically, the Amazon affiliate program, or Amazon, you can buy all this stuff. With the Amazon affiliate program, you can give a link to a product that's being sold on Amazon. And when someone clicks on that link and they buy the product, you get commission for that. And that's how an affiliate program works. With Amazon, you can also, it puts a cookie in your web browser. So if you click on that Amazon affiliate link, it brings you to Amazon.com, and you continue, you do your shopping, you add all that stuff to your cart, and you sign out and you buy the stuff. You check out and you buy all the stuff. You're still going to be getting that, you're still going to be getting commission for all the products that the person buys on Amazon. And I think it's up to 2 days the cookie stays on the web browser. So if that person clicks on it and 2 days later they buy a load of stuff on Amazon, you get commission for all that stuff that they buy. And that's how it works. There's affiliate programs for pretty much, I mean, there's affiliate programs for so many products out there right now and so many kind of services. So Thomann, I love Thomann. I buy a load of gear off Thomann, and I've bought musical instruments, I've bought gear for the studio. They have an affiliate program as well. And that affiliate program goes through a specific affiliate network of a number of different services and products out there. And you can promote that product, and when someone clicks to buy that product, you get commission on that. And that's how it works. And it's becoming very, very popular because you can select your own affiliates, and they can be relevant to the topic you're talking about. And the great thing about affiliates is you don't have, with sponsors and with advertisers, you have to interact with them. You have to show them your demographic. You have to show them your listenership, your audience, how many people listen, watch your show. Whereas with affiliate marketing, you can sign up no matter how many people listen or watch your show, or how many people access your website every day or look at your website every day. It doesn't matter. You can sign up no matter how big or how small you are. And that is one of the great things about affiliate marketing. You could be a very small podcast and still sign up for affiliate programs and still make money. So your audience might be very small, a very small subscriber base of maybe 100 people. But those 100 people are really interested in your podcast. So if you promote one of those affiliate programs on your podcast, the chances of them clicking on that affiliate program and buying something from that service or product, or buying that product, are very high. So you can very easily make money from this, no matter what the size of your audience is. And this is really, really fantastic. And I am doing a little bit of affiliate marketing right now, and I'm subscribed to a few affiliate programs, but I will be getting more affiliate programs in the future, most definitely. So, and a lot of the time, these affiliate programs will provide discounts. So it's a win-win situation. It's a win for the listener who gets a discount on the product or service. And it's also a win for you because you get money, you get commission from that sale. And so this works really, really well. And there's been so many people out on the web who have made a lot of money from affiliate marketing. And also, you can switch it up. You can promote a different affiliate every week. And there are so many affiliates to choose from. You literally select which affiliate you want to promote. You select which affiliate. You look on the web for a product you really like. You look for their affiliate program. You sign up and you instantly promote it. So you could promote a different product every single week. And that's a fantastic way of monetization. And so they're all methods that you can use for a free podcast. Now, another way that you could make money off your podcast is premium content. So you could make your podcast a premium podcast. Now, if you're submitting your podcast to iTunes, you cannot make it a premium podcast. People cannot buy your podcast through iTunes. It has to be free. However, the definition of a podcast is it's a web series, an episodic web series with an RSS feed. It has to have an RSS feed. So you could make it a premium podcast with an RSS feed. But in order to subscribe to that podcast and get that RSS feed, you have to pay. And so you can pay like a monthly fee to subscribe to the podcast, or just a once-off fee, or you could do something like that. So people pay that to you to get your content. The problem with that is there's so many free podcasts out there. Pretty much every podcast out there is free, and there's very few premium podcasts out there that people are used to having this content for free. So if you were to all of a sudden make a premium podcast, I know I wouldn't subscribe to it because I'd have to pay. And there's so much other fantastic content in podcasts out there for free. So, and that's the problem. So you're probably not going to be getting too many people who will actually pay for that. So that's another way. Another way of making money off your podcast is using your podcast as a way of marketing a product that you sell or a service that you provide. So let's say you're a web designer. You could do a podcast about web design, for example. And on that podcast, you can promote the fact that you are a web designer and you can be hired to do web design. And then although you're not directly making money from that podcast, you're still making money from that podcast. That's another way. Another service you could do is you can have a podcast about podcasting, like what I do, and you could sell equipment for podcasting. People could buy the equipment packages from you, and you can make money off that. And that's a kind of an indirect way of making money from your podcast. You promote a product or a service that you provide on your podcast, and that's another way of doing it. So there's lots and lots of different ways of making money from your podcast. I recommend that you definitely look into affiliate marketing, because that could be an unintrusive way of making money from your podcast. I definitely recommend that you do that. You can look at Amazon for affiliate marketing, the Amazon affiliate program. Look at Thomann for affiliate programs if you do a music podcast or a podcast about podcasting. And there's a load of technology services and products out there as well that have affiliate programs. If you do a technology podcast, look at a product or a service that is in your niche a topic that you're talking about on your podcast and see if they have an affiliate program. Chances are they probably do have an affiliate program. Sometimes they don't advertise it or promote it, so you might have to contact them and ask them. And most of the time they'll say yes. So I recommend that you check that out if you wish. And it's a really just a fantastic way of making money is affiliate marketing. And so it really is very, very effective. Another way is if you have a product or a service and promoting that through your podcast, that's a very, very effective way of making money too. Of course, all depending on the amount of viewers and listeners that you have of your podcast. So now I want to talk about mobile websites. And I'm currently, and I'll let you know this, I'm currently in the process and nearly finished, very exciting, I'm nearly finished developing my new website. I have overhauled my website a number of times. You should have seen it when I first started out. It's a very simple website, a very simple theme. I didn't know much about WordPress. And by the way, I do use WordPress. I don't know anything about any other website creation tool out there. All I know is WordPress. Of course, I can. I'm a programmer as well. I would consider myself to be a programmer, so I could write a website from scratch. But I find WordPress to be really just a fantastic tool for podcasting. And I couldn't imagine a podcaster using any other tool for their website for podcasting. It provides amazing plugins. Absolutely amazing plugins for doing your podcast. The PowerPress plugin for managing all your RSS feeds and posts is just a tool that you could not do without. It's just such an amazing tool, such an amazing plugin that I use on my website. But I'm redesigning my website, and it's definitely in a really huge, it definitely has a really huge need for an overhaul. My podcast or my WordPress theme hasn't been updated in 2 years. Or over 2 years. And that was a mistake I made. At the time that I was selecting my theme, I was selecting the theme based on the look of it. I wasn't looking at the theme based on the features that it had or the anything else. So I just I installed the theme and I didn't realize that it hadn't been updated in such a long time. So you might be saying, okay, well, it hasn't been updated, so what? Well, WordPress is updated on a regular basis. Every month or two, there's a new update. And so there, for every new WordPress update, they make changes to WordPress. And so that theme could be using a feature in WordPress that has changed. If there's an update of WordPress, that could change, or it could be completely gone. You know, it could be gone completely. So the developer of that theme will have to make an update to make sure that that theme will continue to work on WordPress. So I updated my WordPress to the latest version, and my website theme started acting very strangely. I got into the PHP files for template files for the theme, and I managed to fix it. But it's not fully back to the way it was before. There was a very strange thing with the sidebar. The sidebar kind of disappeared. I had to go into the code to re-enable the sidebar, and I haven't been able to realign the sidebar exactly where it was before. So I'm definitely doing a huge redesign of the website, but not just the website. I'm doing a redesign of everything. Absolutely everything. I'm giving everything a completely new look. And if you're deciding to start your podcast or kind of redesign your podcast, give it a refresh, I recommend that you definitely take your time. I've done many refreshes in the past of the podcast and the ways that I've done it, like the website, I've given it an overhaul, I've updated logos and intro music. I recommend you definitely take your time. spend time at it. Because before, I didn't. I literally spent 1 or 2 days. I've been spending weeks and weeks at this time to make sure that I'm doing everything correctly. Don't skip. If you put yourself under time constraints, you're not going to come out with a good product. Set up a test WordPress site, which I have done, and mess around with the tools, create the website, and then replace it in with your current website, and you're done. And that's the way that I'm going to be doing it, just to let you know. So I recommend that you do it that way, and make sure that you're just spend time. Spend months if you have to, because you really will regret it, as I have. I'm definitely regretting it now that I didn't do things right the first time. I just wanted to get my podcast set up, and I did everything wrong. And now I'm having to go back and correct the mistakes that I made, the many, many mistakes that I made over the years. I've been doing this for nearly 2 years now, and I have made so many mistakes. I'm going over correcting everything, and some things are just really, really hard to correct. Some things are, you just kind of have to work around them. You can't really fix them. So I'm finding it quite difficult. I'm definitely finding it quite difficult. But I want to talk about creating a mobile website, and that's what I'm doing now. The latest overhaul, I'm doing a mobile website. So, and why is it important to have a mobile website? Well, having a mobile website is part of what people are calling dynamic web design. So dynamic means constantly changing, or a constant change, or an activity, or progress. That's what dynamic means. It just means change. So dynamic web design is kind of a term that's being used for web design now. It's web design that is functional and that works across every single device, across multiple devices. Because we have mobile devices right now, we have standard desktop computers, laptop computers out there as well, and we need to make sure that our websites have a great experience across mobile as well as desktop. It's very, very important. So, and mobile devices have much smaller screens than computers. So if you were to look at a website that's designed for a desktop computer on a mobile device, it's not going to be a very good experience, because the website might be maybe 1,940 pixels wide, and the screen on your mobile device might only be about 600, 700 pixels wide, or even 400 pixels wide, or even less. So you're not going to be able to fit the entire web page on that screen. So the experience is going to be terrible. And I currently do not have a mobile version of my website, but I am definitely working very hard on the mobile version of my new website that I'm working on right now, which I'm very excited about, if you haven't noticed. Another thing about mobile devices is most mobile devices now have touch screens, or they use a different way of, they have a different interface compared to desktops, which are the standard keyboard and mouse or trackpad and mouse. It's a different way of interfacing with the device. Touchscreens as well. So you need to be able to make sure that your website, your mobile website, will be optimized for desktop computers as well as mobile devices that have much smaller screens, and also use touchscreens. So the buttons should be bigger and easy to touch, easy to get from one page to the other. So that's what you should be doing. Now, this, and also having a mobile website, by the way, really helps with your SEO, search engine optimization. If search engines see that, if Google sees that your website is has a mobile version, then it will definitely put your search or your website higher up on the search results. Definitely. But how do you create a mobile website? There are two ways currently with WordPress that you can create a mobile website. You can use a theme that has a built-in mobile website. And there are themes out there that they are themes, but they're also frameworks. They've got frameworks for WordPress that have a number of different features. Two of the most popular are the Thesis theme, as well as Weaver, the Weaver theme and the Weaver 2 theme. I personally use Weaver, but so many websites use Thesis. I've been looking at Thesis. Thesis is a premium framework and theme. It's absolutely amazing. The websites that can be made out of that are incredible, and you don't need very much skills in coding or anything. You can basically do the same in Weaver 2 as well. However, you need to know a little bit more about coding. You need to know more about customizing that website and customizing everything. You can still customize everything in Weaver 2, but need to have a little bit more experience and a little bit more knowledge about doing it. Thesis is much easier, but Thesis starts at $87, and then there's a $165 model, and the pro version is $200. So it's a very expensive premium theme and framework. Whereas Weaver 2, there's a free version, there's a personal version of the pro version, which is about, I think, $30, and then there's a maybe $25, I think. It's very, very reasonably priced. And then there's a pro version for web developers, which is about $50. That gives you permission to install Weaver on as many websites as you want, and you're allowed to use it if you are a web developer or a web designer and you design websites for a living. With WordPress, you can use the Weaver framework and Weaver theme on every single one of the websites that you create for clients. $50. $50, that's all it costs. So it's much more reasonable, much more reasonably priced. That said, it's a fantastic framework, fantastic theme. It's got so many features, including a mobile website or a dynamic web design feature. And so does Thesis. And there are two premium themes. Weaver is free as well, and you get a lot of features with the free version. But the Thesis theme is a little bit more expensive than Weaver 2 theme. But anyway, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. But that's the first method. You're using a framework and a theme. The second method is you can use a WordPress plugin. You can download a plugin onto your website that automatically detects that the device is a mobile device and will turn on a mobile site for you. I can say I recommend doing that, and I'm not going to give any names of any WordPress plugins out there. I'm sure if you do a search for one, you can find it, but I just can't recommend it to you that you do it that way. And that's because plugins don't provide you with a mobile site. The problem with plugins is if you install a plugin and you're viewing it on your mobile device, the content is the same as what's on your website, but it's a generic look. It doesn't have the same look and feel as the desktop version of your website. It's just a generic look. It doesn't have the same images. It doesn't have the same color scheme. It doesn't have the same menu bar or anything. Whereas if you're using a theme with a framework, you have the same color scheme, same header images, you have the same everything. You have the same everything. So that's a much better way of doing it because it looks like your website. Whereas with a WordPress plugin, it's just a generic look for the mobile site. So I can't recommend it. I'm sorry. I just can't recommend it. But if you are looking to do a mobile site and you just want it to be just kind of generic mobile site, sure, try it. Try it out. Try out a WordPress plugin. I can't recommend it though. But yeah, so I think it's definitely very important to have to have dynamic web design. I'm working on it, and Weaver 2 has a fantastic mobile website feature. It's so good. It's really amazing. And Thesis also has a fantastic mobile website feature. And it's not like the mobile website where you disable it on the footer of the website. And also, the problem with a lot of mobile websites that I've come across is they don't provide the same functionality. They're limited. They don't provide the same functionality as the desktop version. So you can't access everything on the mobile version that you can on the desktop version. That is just no go. You can't do that. Whereas with the Thesis theme, with Weaver 2, you're still having the full functionality of the website. You can still access everything, except it's just an easier to use interface. Everything is easier to do. And it's optimized for that mobile device. So, and I definitely recommend that you go have a mobile website because there are mobile devices out there now. And by the way, also make sure with your website that you don't have anything that's Flash-based. Flash is very rapidly fading away. So you want to make sure that you have everything updated to JavaScript, to HTML5. There are, in terms of audio players and video players out there now, everything is moving over to HTML5. There's very few Flash players left. So I'd recommend that you move everything over to move everything away from Flash, move everything away from Java, and also create a mobile version of your website. So now, I'm looking at the time here, and I don't think I'm going to have enough time to talk about the new version of my favorite piece of software for doing video podcasting, Open Broadcaster software. I don't think I'm going to have enough time. I don't know if I'll even have enough time to talk about control surfaces for your video podcast, but I'll see if I can get through it really quickly. I hope I can get it through it really quickly. But I want to talk about, I'm very excited, control surfaces. I'm still kind of working on a new workflow. Basically, what I have now is over on my right-hand side, I have a Windows computer that handles all of the streaming and recording of the show. And then I have my main Mac computer, which handles everything else during the show. So during the show, audio clips, show notes, web browser, if I want to show somebody the web page, I can show that all on the other computer that I use, which is a Mac. And so, but that computer that does all the streaming and recording is all the way over to my right. And the monitor is also over on the right, just above the mixer for me. So if I wanted to look over, and if I wanted to change scenes, the keyboard and mouse is also over here, so I'd have to go all the way back here to the where the keyboard and mouse is and switch scenes from here. And so that's not very practical. So I needed something that I could put on my desk that was wireless, there was no wires needed, that I could control each scene. So if I wanted to bring up a lower third, for example, I could do that very easily. If I wanted to switch over to my computer shot, I could do that very easily. That's my desktop computer right there. I could switch back to my camera. I could add in an image if I wanted to. So I came up with two solutions. The first solution to this is using this little control pad. This is a little one by Advent. I actually got this, and by the way, don't do this yourself. I got this in a retailer, not online, which was a mistake, for €20. €20 I spent on this thing. Very, very expensive keypad. And all it is literally a keypad with 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Now, this is a wireless keypad, though. So I can put this anywhere on the desk. There's no wires to worry about. And I can very easily switch shots. I actually got a wireless keyboard and mouse for €25. So guess what is better value? But this is really cool. So the software that I use, Open Broadcaster software for doing my video podcast, for every scene, I can set a hotkey to that. So I can set the hotkey to numpad 1 for scene 1. And for scene 2, I can set the hotkey to the number 2. So when I press the number 2, it switches to shot number 2 or scene number 2. And when I press number 1, switches back to scene number 1. Very, very simple. And that allows me to very easily control everything that's going on over there on the other computer from here on my desk. That's one method that I came up with. And the other method that I came up with was using the iPad. Yes. And a lot of people, I had this idea quite a long time ago to use the iPad as a control surface. And I downloaded this app called Custom Keypad. It uses VNC technology. VNC technology is used for remote logging into computers to be able to access them from anywhere. It uses VNC technology to log into the computer to be able to get access to it. But I never seemed to get it working until recently. About a month ago, I actually got this working. And basically, you can create a complete custom layout on this. I'm going to take an image of this custom layout and I will post it. I will provide the image in the show notes for this episode. So you can check it out over at talksabouttech.com/ITS/13. If you go to that address, it will bring you to the show notes to this episode, and you'll be able to see the image of the layout here. But I can describe it as best as I can for you. So I've got a number of different buttons here. I've created a number of different buttons, and you can create completely custom layouts, complete custom colors for each button, custom text for each button. You can create labels. You can even put a trackpad on this. You could put a trackpad. You could put a complete keyboard on here. You could use this for anything. So let's say I wanted to do video editing. I could create a layout for all my video editing shortcuts or keys, and I could press that key and it would do that for me. I can also put a trackpad on here so I can control the computer screen from the iPad as well. Very, very cool stuff. But anyway, so what I did was I created a number of buttons. I have 12 buttons all the way across here. And I can press, and they're called cameras. I can press camera 1, it'll give me camera 1. If I press camera 2, it'll give me camera 2. If I press camera 3, it'll give me camera 3, and so on. I also put on here lower thirds. Now, lower thirds are the little, kind of bars on the bottom of the video giving you information. For example, this lower third that I have up here is inside the studio. It's a green kind of a lower third to kind of resemble the whole theme of the show. And it says Michael McAndrew. It's got my Twitter account there. It's got my email there. And so if I press lower third number one, it'll give me lower third number one. If I press back to camera one, it'll get rid of that lower third for me. I also put four yellow media keys, and media one gives me the intro. I have nothing set to media two, three, or four, but I can if I wish. And virtual, I have a load of virtuals along the top here. And if I click virtual one, that'll give me my computer. Very, very easy. And I basically, what you do is you install the program Real VNC. This will work on a Mac or PC, by the way. You install Real VNC on that computer, and you connect, the way that you connect is you create a new device in custom keypad, you type in the IP address of that computer, the local IP address of that computer, you also type in the name of that you want of that computer, the password for that computer, and you log in, and then what you do is you program each of these buttons to do something. So for example, I've got the camera one button here. This is a green button, and when I press that button, I want it to go to camera one. So what I do is I double tap on that button, and I say when I tap once on that button, perform a task. And that task that I wanted to perform is a keystroke and the keystroke number pad one. So basically, when I press that button one, what I will do is it'll perform the task of pressing that number pad one. So it basically acts the same way as with the control with this little keypad. When I press that button one for camera one, it's exactly the same as pressing the number one on the keypad. So that's two methods. Now, what I have found with the iPad is that I have to look down all the time to switch from one camera to the other. Whereas with the keypad, it's very tactile. I can just leave it down. I can have my hand on the keypad and I can just switch shots very, very easily. Tactile feel. Whereas with the iPad, I don't know where I am. I can't feel the buttons, so I have to look down. But with the iPad, the fantastic thing about the iPad is that I can completely customize the layout. I can completely customize it with whatever my needs are. And that's something that's really fantastic. Currently, I'm using the iPad. I was using the keypad for a while, but currently I'm just using the iPad, and it's just such a really cool way, I think, of doing it. So the programs that you're going to need if you want to do this, first of all, if you're a video podcaster, the software that you use for doing your video podcast will have to support hotkey functionality. Open Broadcaster software supports it, which I use. XSplit Broadcaster also supports it. I believe Wirecast also supports hotkey support. VidBlaster supports hotkeys. What are the softwares out there? Boinks.tv supports hotkeys. What am I missing out on? CamTwist supports hotkeys. So, like, pretty much every software out there supports hotkeys. Then you assign a hotkey to a scene. And so you're going to need Real VNC. That's VNC software. It's free, available on the Mac or PC. I've tried this out on both Mac and PC, by the way. You're going to have to get a free Real VNC license, by the way. It's completely free. Don't worry. But you do have to. You have to just get a Real VNC license, a free license. Then what you do is you create a new device on this program that I'm using called Custom Keypad. It's about €3.60 in the App Store. So it's very, very reasonably priced. It's available on the iPad or the iPhone. So you could use your iPhone as a control surface as well, which is very cool. You just create a new device. So in this case, I've got three computers plugged in. I've got MacBook, Mac Pro, and recording computer. Recording computer is the computer I'm currently plugged into. I put in the name of that computer, the host, which is the IP address of that computer, the port. The port is actually specified in Real VNC, and it's the same every time. It's 5900, that's the port. and put in the password, obviously. You set the password within Real VNC. It connects first time very, very easily. Now, I have to say, on the Mac, I tried this out on the Mac first. The Mac has its own VNC software built into it. It's terrible. Don't use it. Use Real VNC, because I haven't been able to get it working on the Mac with just the built-in VNC software. Just use Real VNC no matter what platform you're on. And then set up your layout. There's tutorials within this application that show you exactly how to customize the buttons, how to customize layouts. By the way, you can create loads and loads of layouts. I've got, let me see how many layouts I've got here. I've got like seven layouts out here right now. You can create as many layouts as you want, completely customizable. And it's pretty good fun messing around with this and creating custom layouts. And I just created really quickly a custom layout for Open Broadcaster Software. But of course, in the future, I can customize this to whatever I want and whatever I need in terms of switching. But so I could also, for example, in Open Broadcaster Software, I can set a hotkey to start the recording. I could set a hotkey on here to record, and it could be a nice big red button saying record. So I just press that and it records, starts recording for me. I could do that on this as well. And in terms of the options of what you could use custom keypad for, even if you're not a video podcaster, let's say you're an audio podcaster. Let's say you will use Audacity or Adobe Audition to do all your editing. There's hotkeys or keyboard shortcuts for Adobe Audition that allow you to make cuts, to add in. There's lots of different things for different features and different functionality within the program. So you could set up your own kind of layout here for editing your audio, for editing your video, and when you press that button, it does the exact same thing as the shortcut on the keyboard. So that's one thing you could do. You could also put a trackpad on here and use it as a keyboard, or as a keyboard and mouse if you really wanted to. You could use it as a keyboard and mouse, the iPad or iPhone. What else could you use it for? Whatever, anything that uses the keyboard or anything that uses the mouse, you could use custom keypad for and create a custom layout. I'm just thinking of all the possibilities. So I highly recommend that you check it out. It's the custom keypad app, €3.60 in the App Store. Real VNC, install it on your Windows or Mac computer. It's completely free. You do have to get a free license, however. And check it out. Unfortunately, I'm out of time. I really wanted to talk about all of the updates, all of the new features in the latest version of Open Broadcaster Software, which I use for doing all my video recordings. Unfortunately, I didn't get enough time, but I will be back next week and I will cover the Open Broadcaster Software updates, what new features are available in that new update. And maybe I might have some other stuff. I don't want to say I am definitely going to be talking about something on next week's show, but I definitely will be talking about Open Broadcaster Software, but I can't guarantee anything else because I'll probably forget. but I'll be back next week for another episode of Inside the Studio. I'm going to press the lower third one now, and it's going to bring up, and you can see there's no latency at all, by the way. It's instant. But I press lower third one here, and it brings up my lower third, which is my name, which is Michael McAndrew, my Twitter account, which is TalksAboutTech1 on Twitter, and my email, michael@talksabouttech.com. Please, if you have a question about podcasting, and maybe you think that I might be able to help you out, send me an email, and I will most certainly reply to it and try to help you out the best way that I possibly can. So that pretty much wraps up this episode for today. I want to thank you all for watching or listening to this episode of Inside the Studio. I'll see you next time. Goodbye.